live from Cape Town, this is the Voice of the Cape, 91.3 FM.
Sunday Live on 91.3 FM Stereo. Sunday Live.
23 after 7, my name is Mohammed Sheikh. Welcome back. Now, a recent case of a woman married for 16 years to a man she never met has approached the North Gauteng High Court to set the record straight and hopefully get the marriage annulled, I'll report it earlier this week. Now, according to Africa Check, South Africa had its own fair share of fraudulent marriages. This comes after the Department of Home Affairs received several complaints of approximately 2,132 fraudulent marriages, and only 1,160 of them were found to be truly fraudulent and annulled. This was reported from 1 April 2018 to June 2019 from South Africans that they were in fact not married. Well, joining us online is Dr. Radley Henrico, Senior Lecturer at the Department of Public Law and Jurisprudence, Faculty of Law, University of the Western Cape, to unpack this discussion. Good morning, Doc.
Good morning, Mohammed. Thank you for having me.
It's a pleasure. Now, before we debunk fraudulent marriages and the systemic process involved in it, let's talk about marriage in general and how marriage is recognized under the Marriage Act in South Africa. How do we break them down?
All right. Well, firstly, if one refers to marriages under the Marriage Act, one has to distinguish or identify the fact that our law recognizes three marriages. You have your civil marriages in terms of the Marriage Act of 1961, which is your so-called traditional marriage, your customary marriages, and then your civil union marriages in terms of your 2006 Act. So it's those three marriage institutions that you have, which our law recognizes.
Okay, so the one that people commonly refer to with, any one of the three which you sign up to, would that naturally fall under what people commonly refer to as community of property?
Community of property, yes, it can be included in terms of any marriage regime.
Okay, and other classifications like the ANC without accrual, etc., right?
Correct. The community of property in ANC, that's more associated with the civil and the civil unions marriage act, whereas your customary marriages act would obviously traditionally be associated with the exchange of lobolo and giving effect to indigenous traditional beliefs.
Oh, interesting. So under that, I mean, just on the traditional component, would that type of, or how would the law recognize authenticity of that type of marriage? Is there a certificate that has to be produced? Is there, getting a sign off from the chief of the tribe? How exactly would that go down?
Yes, there's certain legislative requirements that need to be complied with Act 120 of 1998. And if you don't comply with those legislative requirements, then your marriage will not be recognized as a lawful legal marriage and it falls to be set aside.
Interesting.
Yes.
So the ones that, or at least the Department of Home Affairs reporting on fraudulent marriages, in your understanding, does it include all three of the sectors, or were they targeting just the civil component?
The marriages that we're looking at in terms of what's been reported at Home Affairs and the spate you've just mentioned as a prelude to this interview predominantly fall under our traditional normative heterosexual marriage, which is, it falls under the rubric of your marriage act between your husband and wife. But it's not to say that it cannot also occur in terms of your civil union, your same sex marriages.
Do you think because the system of regulation of traditional marriages would vary and would be so vast that it would create a point of vulnerability for people to exploit?
Not necessarily. There's vulnerabilities in all legislative instruments that people find specific loopholes. For example, in your civil and your in your Marriage Act as well as your Civil Unions Act, it only requires one party to go and register the marriage certificate. And the Minister of Home Affairs has, as you might well know, has announced that in 2021 there's going to be an omnibus of legislation, in other words, a unifying act that's going to seek to regulate more effectively the marriages in terms of which both parties are required to register the marriage certificate at Home Affairs in order to ensure as a guard against these fraudulent or sham marriages that are taking place.
Interesting. Well, you know, focusing particularly now on fraudulent marriages, what's the distinguishing factor between fraudulent marriages or marriages of convenience?
All right. Well, remember that fraud is always a misrepresentation, in other words, a falsehood that's made. Thus, in respect of any formal requirement imposed by an act, such as where a marriage officer who solemnizes a marriage is in fact not one who is registered with Home Affairs, that would be a fraud. But your notional and or your legal difference between fraud or your fraudulent or marriage of convenience, you must remember that it would depend your term convenient. It's very loose. It depends on what is meant by convenient. In other words, where two people marry each other for reasons other than love, but in doing so they comply with the legislative requirements, it's not an unlawful marriage. In other words, it could be called convenient but not a fraudulent marriage. However, a marriage which is concluded for fraudulent purposes, namely obtaining citizenship, whilst it's a convenient way of securing citizenship, is indeed a fraudulent marriage.
Now, in the case of these approximately 1163 individuals who have claimed or are found to be fraudulently married, what would be the underlying point? How were these people either not aware that they were married in the first place, or would have also followed or fell under marriages of convenience?
Well, it would always depend on the fact, the underlying facts and circumstances, which would be pertinent to each and every case. But it would, for example, if there hasn't been proper compliance with the legislation, if one of the material elements hasn't been met, in other words, a person discovers that or tries to obtain an identity card from Home Affairs and discovers that she's been married for a number of years to an individual who she's never met in her life. Alternatively, they find that they might very well find that the minister who solemnized the marriage is not registered with Home Affairs. That would be tantamount to a fraudulent marriage, and then we go into the realm of what remedies would be available in terms of your because it's a fake or fraudulent married marriage, what avenues are available to these people.
Sure. So a person, you know, hypothetically gets married fraudulently, either knowingly or unknowingly, that the minister who solemnized the entire marriage was not registered per se. You know, what penalties can one expect to be facing in that regard?
Okay, well, depending on if you look at your Marriage Act and your Civil Union Act, both of them contain provisions for perjury. In other words, having made a false statement under oath, because at the time when the marriage is solemnized, you are requested as one of the parties entering into that union to solemnly swear. It's akin to taking the oath or an affirmation in a court of law, and then your both acts provide for perjury, and perjury is then prosecuted in terms of the Criminal Procedure Act and the common law, and in both instances a maximum prison term of 10 years or a fine can be imposed, but usually realistically we're looking at a court imposing a fine or a wholly suspended sentence.
Interesting.
Especially if it's a first offense.
Now, you touched a little bit earlier on with regards to the realm for avenues for, you know, for people who can remedy the situation, either who were willingly or unwillingly part of a fraudulent marriage or marriage of convenience. How do they access these remedies?
All right. Remember, one must always recall that marriage changes, or even a purported marriage, purportedly changes the status. You were previously or erstwhile a single person, and now you are a married person, and the law recognizes that as a change in your status as an individual. So the appropriate path to follow would be to approach the High Court to have the marriage annulled. In other words, this is an order declaring that no marriage ever existed or nullifies the marriage. Now, when we speak of an annulment, the court either declares the marriage void or voidable. Oh. And in both instances, it can declare the marriage is at an end. Now, in declaring the marriage is annulled, in other words, set aside, let me give you an example. A marriage would be void in circumstances such as where parties married within the prohibited degrees of marriage. In other words, a brother and a sister got married, or a mother married her son. Those are called prohibited degrees of marriage. Or where one of the parties is already married, or where the marriage certificate was fraudulently issued by an official at Home Affairs who was bribed to issue that marriage certificate. And in this regard, I'll point out that one of the most recent cases in this regard was handed down by it's a case referred to by Judge Cameron in the appeal court, Road Accident Fund, in respect of which it was noted that our courts regard fraud or fraudulently obtained certificates with the highest regard of disdain. And this point was made by Judge Plaskett in 2017, referring right back to our common law in 1948, where courts will not hesitate to set aside any certificate or notice or document which has been fraudulently obtained. So a court will annul or set aside a marriage which is void in those type of circumstances. In other words, where there hasn't been or could never have been said to have been compliance with the legislative regime or material requirements of the Act. And when I say void, it means that from it's void ab initio. From the very outset, there was never a marriage to begin with. One has to then discern that or distinguish that from a marriage which is annulled or set aside on a voidable basis. In other words, there is a chance it can be ratified. And an example would be where the male partner in the marriage is shown to be impotent or sterile, or one of the parties entered into the marriage, let's say the wife was pregnant with the child of another man at the time of the marriage, that is a basis in law upon which the marriage can be set as annulled as a voidable marriage. Now, why I say voidable is if the wife accepts that the husband is impotent and says that, well, she will continue with the marriage, then there's no problem. And similarly, the husband accepts his wife bearing the child of another man, then there's no reason, then it's avoidable, meaning it can be set aside, but not necessarily. In other words, it can be ratified, but it's not in contravention of a specific law of any of the aforesaid marriage regimes that I've referred to. And in this way, annulment is a legal way of addressing void or voidable marriages, whereas a divorce is issued when a marriage is irretrievably broken down.
Just one more thing to pick your brains before I let you enjoy the peace of Sunday. So we see in many instances within the traditional religious sectors that many times people get married within a religious domain or traditional domain, but never actually according to the customs and traditions of that particular norm, you know, for, let's say, a Muslim marriage or a Christian marriage under the church, etc. But many times they don't apply as a registered couple to the Department of Home Affairs or, you know, all the judiciary bodies involved. And it so happens that, let's say, 20 years down the line, they accrue assets together and they go divorce according to the traditional sector as well. And then they do apply, you know, for one is taking the other as legal, you know, taking the legal route against the other for, let's say, claiming maintenance or claiming anything else. Is there recourse for, you know, individuals who perhaps kept it traditional, but only when there's a problem that happens later on, then they want to approach the courts for assistance. Is there light at the end of tunnel for such people, especially in cases where, let's say, a woman was divorced and now she helped build a business empire with a husband, and now, you know, they're getting divorced and she's left high and dry because everything is perhaps on his name. Is there recourse for people like, many people like, who find themselves in this type of situation?
If I understand your question, if parties were supposed to carry out formal procedures subsequent to the wedding and they failed to do so, correct, and years down the line they seek to pursue other activities or they seek to dissolve the union as such. Mm-hmm. Yes, indeed. Either of the parties can approach the High Court for a declarator order and say, you know, in 2010 we entered into a union and unfortunately the marriage certificate was never lodged or registered with the Department of Home Affairs, mm-hmm, and we want a declarator issued by the High Court recognizing or stating that we were lawfully married, mm-hmm, because one can only be divorced if one is married. Mm-hmm. So the court would have two orders. The first order would be a declarator stating that you were married on such and such a date, and your second order would be your order seeking a dissolution of the marriage on grounds of irretrievable breakdown.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Okay, so there is recourse, and I think I'm glad that you know, the law accommodates for people who maybe, you know, 20, 30 years back ago, people really didn't appreciate the full complexity of, you know, marriage under the or marriage within the conventional way, and applying by Home Affairs was like a traditional thing, keep it at home and, you know, carry on with life. So I'm glad there is recourse, especially nowadays. Well, I'm hoping that nowadays Gen Z, Gen X probably has great ambition in terms of getting everything formalized and making, you know, more appropriate decisions. But nonetheless, Dr. Randley, thank you so much for your time this morning. I really do appreciate it.
You're most welcome, Mohammed. Have a good day.
You too. Thank you. Well, Dr. Radley Henrico, Senior Lecturer at the Department of Public Law, UWC. Well, it is 40 after 7.